Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey there, Cats fans. This is your host, the Capital Score Smile, JJ Regan. Quick note on today's show, it is the Mailbag Podcast. And because it is based on your questions, we actually recorded it a few days before the game in Chicago. I wanted to throw this note in there just so you guys didn't think we were glossing over what had to have been the worst performance of the season. We will get into that in the next episode of the Capitals Face Off Podcast. But today, it is just your questions, and we still have plenty of good topics to talk about. So please check it out on this, the latest edition of the Capitals Face Off Podcast.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off Podcast. Here's your host, JJ Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off Podcast. I'm, of course, your host, the Capitals correspondent, JJ Regan. With me today, he's the Capitals insider. He's the grumpy to my Snow White. He's Tarik Abushir. Tarik?
That's about right.
Oh, you actually know that? You've heard of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
I have.
Oh, what a banner day this is. Tarik has actually heard the reference that I make at the beginning of the podcast.
And I'm grumpy.
Yes, you are. But hey, you know, a lot of people would describe me that way. Anyway, it's a mailbag pod, meaning that you, the listener, get to decide today's topics. And we're going to dive right in because you guys sent us tons of questions. So first, from Stephen Hall. He says, first off, I wanted to say I love the show. I can never get enough Caps coverage, and this just adds to my addiction. So thank you for what you do. Thank you very much, Stephen. We appreciate that. My question is simple. Do you think Barry Trotz has lost this team? I find it very disappointing that the team is regressing as we get closer to crunch time. I'm getting tired of hearing about all the corrections needing to be made, but never seeing any changes.
I wouldn't say that he's lost the team, no. I would say that he's probably under a little more pressure than he was in, say, December and January. This team has taken a step backwards at a time where they probably should be taking a step forward. Like a lot of people in that dressing room, you know, they've got to figure this out. They've got to get things turned around. But, you know, in terms of, you know, if where you're leading here is, you know, is there going to be a late season coaching change? I don't see that happening.
No.
I don't think he's lost his team. I don't think it's this, even this little backslide is something where ownership or management is going, oh my God, you know, this is the group. They've got to figure it out.
Tarik, you remember what this team was like at the beginning of the season, how that locker room was almost toxic. They could not get over what happened to them at the end of last season. The fact that they were over to overcome that and have been in first place for as long as they have shows that he has not lost this team. They're going through a bit of a downslide. Those will happen over the course of an 82-game season, but it's February. How many times have we heard from people, stop peaking in January and February? Peak in the spring. Now, I'm not one of those people who thinks that, oh, it's good that they're playing bad now because this means they'll peak later. And that, and I don't look at success, midseason success, and say, oh, no, this is bad because it means they won't peak. I'm just saying it's February. They're still in good position. They're still in playoff position. Let's not go overboard here with a small backslide.
This is not the time to go overboard, but you know, you should be aware that they are now in the middle of the pack in terms of playoff positioning, even though they're leading the division, and that a continuation of this slip-up could result in a lot of people being under a lot more pressure.
Sure. Very fair. Moving on, Andrew Coleman writes, I'm from the Pittsburgh area, and I'm a Caps fan behind enemy lines.
Yeesh.
Barry Trotz received a lot of criticism about player development and game management, but doesn't Brian McClellan get some of the blame? Barry can only do so much with the players he has, i.e. the defense. If he doesn't have an NHL caliber blue line, then the blame should be put on the guy who put the blue line together, right?
Well, I mean, if you're just going to isolate and just point to one position group, I guess, but they've known all along what this year was going to look like. I mean, they knew 3 years ago that 2017-18 was going to have some really young, inexpensive players on the roster. They were hopeful that the salary cap ceiling was going to continue to rise and that the NHLPA was going to trigger the full 5% inflator clause every single time. And, you know, it looks like it's going to go up again, which is going to probably by a significant amount, which is going to help them probably get John Carlson under contract. But they knew that they were going to start having a roster that resembled the Penguins, the Blackhawks, and other top-heavy teams. The difference is they didn't win the Cup. And,
yes,
you know, if you're going to blame Brian McClellan for anything, you know, he probably misjudged the market a little bit on Kuznetsov. I think that contract's still probably a little high, which led to needing to jettison Marcus Johansson. But they knew difficult waters were ahead. Could they have mitigated things a little bit and maybe saved some money and gotten another defenseman in free? Maybe. But I would say what McClellan has done positively outweighs some of the slip-ups that he's had in terms of managing the cap. So
I would agree with that. I think, you know, it seems crazy to say now, but I think they're exceeding expectations for this season. Brian McClellan made that two-year championship window. That ended last year, and they're still a playoff team. I almost wonder if they were thinking that this would be more of a rebuild year or more of a, hey, let's turn the team over to the new core of guys like Kuznetsov than it has been because guys like Ovechkin are playing so well. Am I going to sit here and criticize McClellan for having inexperience on the blue line? No, because at some point you have to get those guys playing time. And if we remember also, we had Taylor Chorney and Aaron Ness playing at the beginning of the season for more veteran guys, but it was clear that Bowie and Juice were the better options on the blue line.
I mean, if there's anything you could criticize management for, it was maybe not showing a little more restraint the past two deadlines as they kind of try to load up and bolster.
Yes.
You know, Zach Sanford would look really good in this lineup right now.
Zach Sanford would definitely have a spot in this lineup.
I feel like a few times they might have mortgaged a little bit more, but they were just so dialed in and focused on this is our group. You know, we're loaded up. We've got the best roster in the we have to deliver on a Stanley Cup championship. And sometimes I think that maybe someone in that room should have gone, but what if we don't? what if the Penguins are still better?
Right. Hey, you know, only one team wins these a year. You know?
So I would say, you know, when I look at the way this team is constructed, I would probably say that'd be my one criticism. But
yeah. Hindsight is 2020. You know, I don't like the Oshie contract. I think it's too long. Kuznetsov probably got a bit more than the market says. But, you know, how much did we criticize him for how he handled Vegas? Can you imagine if he gave up the ransom that Columbus gave up? And Columbus gave up a king's ransom so that they would take the player who is now their leading scorer in William Karlsson. I mean, can you imagine if they gave up a king's ransom and still lost Philip Grubauer just to keep Nate Schmidt? Is that worth, what I think, a first and a second round pick? No. So hindsight's always 20/20. You can always question a general manager. I think the team is overreaching expectations this year, so I'm not going to be too hard on him. But I will say this. Don't trade a first-round draft pick for a rental player. Don't do that. I'm not a big fan of that. We're going to get to more of your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Tark, we got a bunch of questions from Samantha Chamberlain that we're going to dive into. Samantha writes, I used to get sad on Caps days because he didn't have games, and then I discovered your podcast. Now I have something to look forward to on off days. Thank you for that, Samantha. Sam has three questions. Number one, if you were Trotz, would you consider putting Andre in Hershey for a few games so that he can get his mind right, tear up the ice, and build his confidence back?
No.
Thank you, Tark. The answer to that question is no. I see Andre as a sort of Jacob Vrana type guy. I think it would be hard for him to view that as anything other than a demotion if he goes to Hershey, and I think it would be hard for him to focus. He's just got to do it in the NHL. That's the only way he's going to get his confidence back.
But he's also not on an entry-level contract anymore. So
That's true, too. That's a good point, Tarek. He would have to clear waivers, which means this is a non-starter because you're not going to give up Andre Burakovsky for nothing. That would make no sense. So that is not an option there. Number two, could you walk us through what happens behind the scenes as far as practices and the locker room? I go to practices at Kettler every weekend and always wonder what other types of conditioning they do and what happens in between periods during games. Do they all switch skates or sharpen them or dry their helmets? How much time do they spend together each day off the ice? Tarek, give us a behind-the-scenes look at what these players do during practices and games.
Yeah, so practices, they actually do work out after practice. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of prep before they even get on the ice. I mean, if guys have nagging injuries, they go see the trainer, they get massages, they get what they need to do to get themselves ready for practice. Because, you know, at the highest level, I mean, practice is a competition, especially if you're a bottom six forward.
Right.
You got to look good getting on the plane. Your tie better be straight or you might be the scratch next game. So these guys are under a lot of pressure. So, yeah, they work out afterwards. They eat there, you know, they're Chef Robbie who prepares, you know, a very elaborate meal.
And let me tell you, some of the best days are when we're working late on those practice days and the chef comes and says, hey, we got some leftovers.
Oh, that's good stuff, man.
Oh, that's great.
That is some good stuff. But yeah, so practice is about, I mean, you know, a practice day, even though they're only on the ice for, let's say, 45 minutes, they're in that building for a lot longer. You know, I would say, typical practice on a day that's not following a game starts at 10:30 at Kettler, and I roll in around 10:15 typically, and every player has been there for even the days when I get there an hour or an hour and a half early for something. Players are already there getting their bodies taken care of,
right?
And when I leave, and I leave after doing some work, there's still cars in the parking lot. I mean, it's you're going over film with coaches. They're showing you, they're giving you a peek ahead at what's coming up on the schedule. But they're also looking back at, hey, here's why you're struggling in the faceoff circle right now, Lars. And they'll go through, Blaine or Forsyth or one of the other assistants will go through 30 or 40 video clips that have been prepared by Brett Leonhardt and Tim Ohashi. They'll go through and say, here's. You know, they'll give some video clips to the assistant coach. The assistant coach will then sit down with the player and show them. And so, you know, there's meetings. There's a lot of stuff that goes on a practice day. You know, it's also interesting if you've ever played hockey, you know, when you were a little kid and you'd get out there on the ice and you do a drill and then you stop and then you do another drill and then the coach would explain it. Then they explain everything at the front end and they expect you to remember every single thing down to exactly where you're supposed to be and what you're doing at all moments of that, because they don't have time to waste.
Right.
So there's a lot of prep even before you go on the ice for practice. On a game day, that's the long day for players because, you know, they're on the ice at 10:15 in the morning for the morning skate. They're there. If they're a little banged up, they're probably there 8:30. They go through video of the opponent they're playing. They go through special teams, power play, penalty kill, systems. They go through everything. You know, there is a video presentation, again, made by the video coaches who are looking ahead at the opponent and, you know, are very well-versed into how that opponent has been playing, what they've been doing lately, trends, other things that the players need to know. They have to absorb that information because they show those videos. And it's like you're cramming because you better remember it because this is how you feed your family. This is how you get paid. I mean, this is – and they don't stop and rewind. I mean, it's all right, here's their penalty kill. Here's their power play. And you got to remember all that stuff and then take it onto the ice for the morning skate. Then there's more meetings afterwards where they might go over more stuff. And then you get to go home for a couple of hours. You know,
Nap.
If you're on the road, you go back to the room with your roommate. You might take a nap. You might do it. You know, you have a few hours before you get back on the bus to go back to the arena. If you're at home, hopefully your wife isn't nagging you too much, and you don't have to do a whole lot with the kids because you only got a few hours to kind of recapture some of that energy you just expended in the morning skate to get ready for the game. The players arrive at the building 4:30 ish.
Yeah, about between, 2 hours before before the game.
Between 4:30 and 5. I think the rule is you got to be in by 5 or you got to pay a fine.
Yeah.
Kind of a kangaroo court fine. Mm. So every once in a while you'll see Ovechkin rolling in at like 4:58. He's walking really quickly. a lot of players, you know, just you got a stuff going, you got a lot of stuff going on, but you got to be in by 5. Then they go over more stuff and then warm-ups and then game time and then media and then you know, showers and then get dressed. And then sometimes you're driving back to Dulles Airport to get on a plane to start a road trip to go to the next city. It's a long day.
How about in between periods? What are they doing there to get ready?
They're talking. I mean, you know, line mates are talking to each other. The coach will come in and say what he's got to say, you know, whether he's got to light into him or keep him encouraged. There will be assistant coach will come in with his MacBook in his hand and go, hey, look, take a look at this. Here's what I noticed in the first period. And that's from the assistant coaches who are upstairs who might have caught something about it. You know, a player doing something on a face off and they're showing now Nicholas Backstrom. Here's what you got to do a little better in the second period to win some. So there's a lot of, you know, players are line mates are talking to each other. Hey, here's what I see. Did you see that? Because they talk on the bench too, but they are also making adjustments amongst themselves.
Right.
You know, and the thing that I always find interesting is how much equipment they take off during between periods. Because you know, I do the intermission interviews sometimes, and so when they come out, some guys like to do it right away, and they're still pretty much in all their gear. Some guys like take off their shoulder pads, take off their jersey, take off their helmet, take off their skates. Take off their elbow pads. Like they almost get halfway like out of because they want their stuff to be dry when they put it back on, dry and warm when they go back out.
Right.
So. You know, like Ovechkin, for example, if anyone's been to a game, you've seen how he hands his gloves down the bench to the equipment. He wants dry gloves. He doesn't like gloves to feel a little wet and slimy. He feels like he doesn't handle his stick as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in between periods. And if you're injured, you might be getting something worked on, too, so you can get back out there and perform your best.
Fascinating stuff there. I hope that answers your question. Last one. I love data and stats that you spit out during pods or games. Some of these stats I would never have thought of myself. What does it take to become an NHL analyst or Caps stat analyst? And she wants to know if she can shadow someone for a game or practice to see how those stats are gathered. Well, it's not going to be by us because let me tell you something about those stats. When we come in on game day, the Capitals provide a thick packet of stats on both teams. So a lot of preparation we do is memorizing the stats that people gather for us.
That is true. But I will tell you this. One thing I do also is a lot of times you'll read a stat that's prepared by somebody else, and it gives you half the story.
Yes.
But it'll like spark your it'll kind of spark your imagination. You're like, ooh, that's a good number. Let me look at the last month as opposed to just the last five games.
Mm.
And so, yeah, the stats package kind of gets credit for starting the conversation.
Yes.
But I would say most of the stats that I put out there on Twitter or I say, I'm not just reading from the stat book. Like that might have said, ooh, you know, I might have read a note that said, ooh, Minnesota's having a really good stretch at home right now. And I'll look back a little more and say, oh, they're 10-0-3. Well, how many goals have they scored? How many shots have they taken? And what's their power play doing at home? And so you can add another layer of sophistication to those stats. But yes, JJ's absolutely right. There is a lot that's simply handed to you, but
right. Anyone can regurgitate stats. Our job is to look beyond the stats and to tell a story using those stats. So you have to look beyond that. And if you want to talk to someone who does stats, I think Tommy Chalk is the guy who gets all the stats for the Caps. So why don't you look him up on Twitter strike up a conversation with him because he's the research guy for them. And we're going to be back with more of your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Tark, Greg Christian has a question. He has two questions, in fact. The frequent contributor, Greg Christian. Hey, JJ and Tark, I never miss a podcast. You guys are so knowledgeable. I love getting all your insights. Thank you very much, Greg, and we appreciate your questions. He writes, I've heard you all talk about the power play woes a lot, saying that with so much talent, there's no excuse for them being in the middle of the pack efficiency-wise. Do you think part of the problem is that they're so structured and, therefore, so predictable that other teams can plan and execute an effective defensive strategy?
I think that a lot of what they do hasn't become stale, but it is a little predictable. But if you've noticed the last month or so, they've done a better job of mixing up their look.
Mm-hmm.
Their second unit has started to get involved more frequently. Lars Eller, Brett Connolly, there's other guys in that other unit that are starting to score. To answer your question, Greg, there was a time back in maybe December when they simply were not producing at a level commensurate with their talent. They've actually been very good lately on the power play. This power play is starting to click, but more importantly, Greg, I think it's the fact that the second unit is starting to get involved.
Yeah, that's important. If I had two criticisms of this power play, one, it would be that John Carlson, as good as he is, he can't hit Ovechkin in the tape consistently. And I think that's a problem because their biggest weapon is that one-timer from the office where there is pretty much no defense for that. There's nothing you can do. And second, I think when you have Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov playing on the power play, you have two centers there, which means that sometimes it's hard to know who's really quarterbacking that power play. It's hard to know. I mean, when it used to be Nicholas Backstrom was the guy, was the straw that stirred the drink. He was the guy, he was quarterbacking, he was making the calls. When you add a second center to that mix, sometimes it's a little difficult there to know, okay, who's the guy who's setting things up here? So those would be my two criticisms, but Tark is correct in that they are playing much better. So it's not a huge concern for me, especially because, as we see in the playoffs, power play always disappears. So Greg Christian also has a second question. Do you have any insight into what gets said on or behind the bench during a period like the one we saw against Detroit? I've read and heard that Holtby and possibly others expressed irritation and anger during the second intermission. Yes, we were told that Braden Holtby had a few words for his teammates in between those periods. Usually people are pretty tight-lipped about who's saying what. We hear sometimes names, but we never hear what. They don't want to tell us what was said. They believe that's just for the players' ears only. But you are correct in that Braden Holtby did have some words for this team after the second period, and that is completely understandable considering he was the only one playing in the second period.
Well, look, that's not new or different. That happens a lot when teams have bad periods. I was told by someone that Holtby didn't call out anyone individually. It was more of a passive-aggressive rant directed at the team's effort level in general. But it certainly certainly had the effect that he wanted. It woke everyone up.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there are leaders in other dressing rooms that will grab a guy and will challenge him face to face. This team doesn't really have that, which isn't a bad thing. I think that can sometimes lead to conflicts in personality and lead to bigger problems down the road.
Yeah.
I think there's enough leadership in this room. It was nice to hear that Braden stepped up and said what he said. But yeah, after terrible periods, there's often times where leaders step up and voice displeasure, and it comes in all forms. Sometimes it's a direct face-to-face challenge to a guy who's not carrying his weight, and sometimes it's just kind of a under-your-breath kind of rant at how everyone's not doing their jobs.
Right. Yeah, we heard a lot last year that Nicholas Backstrom got a lot of respect from his teammates because at some point in that Pittsburgh series, he said, enough, enough. And he had some choice words for his teammates. And, you know, the low-key, soft-spoken Nicholas Backstrom getting up and having choice words for his teammates, I think that opened a lot of eyes, and they rebounded. They definitely responded to it. They almost came back and won that series after being down 3-1. So we're never going to hear exactly what's said, but things do get said, and when that happens, we usually hear a few names of who's making those calls there. I think Brooks Orpik is a guy who speaks sometimes. He's the guy who's viewed as a leader in that room. Ovechkin's viewed as a leader, but we're never going to hear what exactly they say because that's for the players only. Thank you for your question, and thank you all for your questions. If you want to have your question read and answered on the next Mailbag Pod, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. We really appreciate the participation. These episodes don't happen without your questions, so we really appreciate everyone who has a question. Remember, there's no such thing as a stupid question.
Yeah, there is.
Unless Tark proclaims that it's a stupid question, but I usually edit that out anyway. His 20-minute rants before each question going, oh, I can't believe they asked that.
That does not happen.
If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. It's not enough to just send us questions on the email. You got to give us a good rating and a good review wherever it is you're getting these podcasts from because that really does help us out. I know I say it every episode. I wouldn't badge you with it unless it really mattered. So for those who have, we really appreciate it. Some good things being said about us, Tark. Surprisingly about you, but some good things being said. We really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. We can't do this without you. So thank you for all your participation. For Tarik El-Bashir and JJ Regan, let's get the puck out of here.